Welcome to Shattering This, a program that is devoted to those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. For those of you who are interested in knowing who is working against our interest, for those who want to understand how and why they're doing so, because ultimately condemning such schemes isn't hateful. It's the most caring and compassionate thing we can do. In our concluding hour today, as we have done every day for the last 2 weeks, we're going to continue to use evidence and reason to compare Paul's letter to the Galatians, to Yahweh's Torah, and to Yahusha's testimony to see if the founder of the Christian religion, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, was a false prophet. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. It saddens me, grieves me, to hear politicians talk about commemorating the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center in 1993 and 2001, saying we'll never forget. It wasn't a terrorist attack. No, I'm not going into conspiracy theory. The U.S. government didn't perpetrate the bombing of those buildings. They were suicide bombings. They were perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. But to call those, both those attacks, one by Ramzi Youssef, first bombing in 1993, and then the second bombing where Muslims behaved in their standard way as suicide bombers, terrorist attacks, saying that we would never forget the terrorist attacks when there isn't an American politician alive, no one in the media, who even to this day is willing to hold Islam accountable for what Islam has done. Every one of those suicide bombers on 9/11, as well as all of the operatives in 1993 who first tried to bring down the World Trade Center, were devoted Muslims. They were the best Muslims. They were fundamentalist Muslims. Prior to their missions, they all videotaped themselves reciting the Quran and Hadith to justify their acts. The Quran depicts Muhammad as a ruthless terrorist and tells Muslims to kill all who will not submit to Allah and Islam wherever they find them. It is obvious when you read the Quran, when you read the accountings of Muhammad's life as they are portrayed in the Hadith, whether they be the topical collections or the chronological depictions by Tabati and Ishaq, that those who screamed Allahu Akbar, the Islamic prayer of fear, confessing to the crime, were good Muslims. And that so long as Islam exists, 99.9% of all terrorist acts worldwide will be perpetrated by the best Muslims. But rather than announce the truth, rather than use evidence and reason to conclude conclusively that the problem that occurred, the disaster, the carnage that happened in both 1993 and again in 2001, was as a direct result of the religion of Islam, and that the terrorists had not corrupted their religion had corrupted them. Our inability to convey that is ultimately going to lead to our demise. The very religion that we will not hold accountable will be responsible for the destruction of this country. Now, they won't operate alone. There are many other nefarious concerns that are all collectively working to destroy what was once a great country. But foremost among them, the most lethal and brutal blows will be perpetrated by Muslims, because not only hasn't America remembered what occurred, we never understood it in the first place. John McCain says that veterans shouldn't be treated this way. Well, you know, when veterans are abused, and they are, you know, veterans die trying to get treatment. The veterans were promised their own separate health care system. In fact, it's a stunningly inefficient system. The VA runs hospitals. Now, you want to know what Obamacare is ultimately going to bring? Look at the Veterans Administration. Horrible. Inefficient. And those who need help often die on the waiting lists. If you want to know what your government really thinks of you when they solicit you for service, be a veteran who needs the VA's help. And if you're thinking about entering service in the military, go talk to a veteran who is relying upon the VA before you do so. The other item in the news that I wanted to comment on is the announcement that the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down over 200 points on early news that retail reports were devastatingly bad. It is amazing how in the media we're constantly besieged with reports of how wonderful the economy is. That the economy added, 100,000 new jobs. And then if you do a little research, you'll say, but the workforce contracted by 800,000 jobs. And then they'll have another report that unemployment claims are down. But if you do a little research, you'll find that they're only down because many people who had been previously unemployed and were engaged looking for work gave up. And they're no longer counted as unemployed when they give up looking for a job. We have not recovered from the government-imposed recession that started towards the end of the Bush administration, and now 6 years in to this new administration, after squandering trillions of dollars, we're still languishing here, a deadbeat and debtor nation. Speaking of nations, in the news today, the ethnic Russians in the eastern part of the country, on Irkutsk, are now saying, this land was never the Ukraine. We speak Russian. We are Russians. Most of our lives we have been Russian citizens. It is time to kick out the Ukrainian army. They're right. With the United States tongue-lashing Israel, telling Israel that its unwillingness to release Muslim terrorists in the name of peace, that their focus on building homes, as opposed, I guess, to launching terrorist raids, is inacceptable and counterproductive. In the midst of us tongue-lashing Putin for claiming that he's engaged in behavior that the United States is actually responsible for instigating, we're also in a war with words with China. This administration has put the United States in an adversarial position with both Russia, Israel, and with China. China's Forest Ministry blamed the United States, you might as well just say I'm blaming the Obama administration, on Friday for stoking tensions in the disputed South China Sea by encouraging countries to engage in dangerous behavior, which is exactly what the United States did in Kiev. We encouraged people to engage in dangerous behavior. We're doing the same thing off the waters, the coasts of China. He's speaking of the Philippines and, of course, of Japan and of Vietnam. China this week announced that it is accusing Vietnam of intentionally colliding with one of its ships in the South China Sea after Vietnam asserted that Chinese vessels used water cannons and rammed eight of its vessels at a weekend over the weekend near an oil rig. You know, it was the alleged Gulf of Tonkin incident where America claimed that a Vietnam ship, wasn't much of a ship, but nonetheless, that a Vietnam vessel threatened to ram an American warship that we instigated the Vietnam War. We sacrificed like 57,000 American lives on that incident, which turned out to be untrue. And here now we have Vietnam actually ramming Chinese ships and Chinese ships ramming Vietnamese ships. Is the United States trying to instigate a war? The United States called China's deployment of the rig provocative and unhelpful. That's the term that the State Department of the United States and the White House used to besmirch Putin's trip to Crimea. It was provocative and unhelpful. That's the term that the State Department used to besmirch Israel when it wouldn't release hundreds of additional Islamic terrorists from prison. It was provocative and unhelpful. Well, the provocateur is the United States of America. We are exactly as Yahweh described us in the 18th chapter of Yeshaya, Isaiah. Chinese foreign ministry spokesmen Cheng Ning, repeated that the waters the rig is operating in around the Paracel Islands was Chinese territory, and that no other country had the right to interfere in what it was doing in its territorial waters. Quote, it must be pointed out that the recent series of irresponsible and wrong comments from the United States, which neglect the facts about the relevant waters, have encouraged certain countries to engage in dangerous and provocative behavior. End quote. China knows exactly what the United States has become. It is truly amazing that the largest holder of U.S. debt, now this would be largest real holder of U.S. debt, because if you count the Federal Reserve and their illusion, then you're buying into the myth that the Federal Reserve is really a bank. So the largest actual holder of U.S. treasuries is China. And here is the United States provoking China. I mean, when you're in debt over $17 trillion and the largest holder of your debt, the country with whom you have the largest trade imbalance, the country that possesses some 90% of rare earth elements that are essential in today's economy and technologies, and you are positioning America in opposition to them and encouraging other countries to be in opposition. You even announced that you are remaking your military, particularly your Navy and your Air Force, so that it can more effectively oppose China. And then you hear China acknowledge all this and say, it must be pointed out that the recent series of irresponsible and wrong comments from the United States of America, which neglect the facts about the relevant waters, have encouraged certain countries to engage in dangerous and provocative behavior. We urge the United States to act in accordance with maintaining the broader picture of regional peace and security, and act and speak cautiously on relevant issues, and stop making irresponsible remarks and that do harm rather than maintain regional peace and stability. In Yeshaya 18, Yahweh makes it abundantly clear that the rhetoric of the United States is condescending, that it is arrogant, that it is erroneous, and that it is instigating war. China just accused the United States of doing exactly what Yarwa predicted America would do. Putin, by the way, has said the same thing, as has Netanyahu, the other recipients of America's tongue lashings. And Americans sit back and, you know, I'm sure Senator John McCown just loves it when we besmirch other countries, and then he jokes when they hold us accountable in their rhetoric, mocking them, and that the press laps it up. And so I think most Americans actually believe that China is the provocateur and that America is the peacemaker. But I'm going to tell you, folks, the rest of the world knows. America has long since ceased to be respected around the world. We are a laughingstock. And we're a laughingstock because of what we have said and what we have done. I know that's not a popular truth, but it is nonetheless true, and we have done it to ourselves. Reuters is reporting that two decades ago, the military in Nigeria was seen as a force for stability across West Africa. And so the liberals at Reuters are now encouraging the world to recognize that the failure of Nigeria to maintain its military at the highest levels has made it susceptible so that the country can no longer keep security within its borders. Think about that. Remember yesterday we were talking about how the world was becoming a police state and America was leading the charge? That the military was now the first call in many countries to quell civilian protests. It's happening every day in Egypt. It's happening in almost every city in Syria. It's happening every day in Iraq. It is the exact tool that America is encouraging the acting government in Kiev to deploy against those who do not wish to be part of the act. It is what happened in the United States immediately after the Boston Marathon bombings. This is the universal now, worldwide, deployment of military units within countries where the foe becomes the citizens of those countries. The militaries around the world are targeting their own citizens. You know, militaries were originally conceived to target external foes and to protect the country from external foes, but every day, more and more, the integration between police and military is being cemented. So here's Reuters saying that, oh, you know, the problem in Nigeria isn't Islam. No. We don't want to blame Islam for Boko Haram. The problem in Nigeria is that they've neglected their military. If only the Nigerian military was more stout, and if it was better funded, then you wouldn't have this problem. They would keep the people secure. From an internal foe? You know, we're not talking about Nigeria being invaded by Chad. We're not talking about the Libyans moving south and crossing the Sahara and invading and conquering Nigeria. We're talking about Nigerians, terrorizing Nigerians. And their answer for that isn't a robust understanding of Islam and to speak out against it, exposing and condemning the religion for the disgusting acts that it perpetrates in the name of Allah, kidnapping and rape, burning down of buildings with people still in them. No, the answer, according to Reuters in Nigeria, is a stronger military. And what they're actually suggesting, in fact, you'll see it in CNN editorials now, is CNN will say, what can we learn from Nigeria and the kidnapping of the little girls? That we need to have a strong military. Now, that means that the military has to have the citizens of its country as its enemy. And you become a totalitarian military state when that occurs. Think of it. That's what they're proposing. It's Orwellian. Welcome to Brave New World. Where being brave gets you killed. No. But it's astonishing that rather than correctly accuse Islam, it's just like 9/11. You know, here we are commemorating the museum, and yet no one speaking is going to besmirch the religion that motivated it. No one in reviewing what happened in Nigeria wants to admit that the problem is fundamentalist Islam. It says a lack of investment in training and failure to maintain equipment and dwindling cooperation with Western forces has damaged Nigeria's armed services. While Boko Haram is increasingly well-armed and a determined foe. You know, just think of how stupid that is. And when you recognize just how stupid that is, then you realize what this was written by an American journalist, by someone indoctrinated in a prestigious American university. I mean, to suggest that Boko Haram is equally armed, better armed, than the Nigerian military is just absolutely absurd. Boko Haram doesn't have aircraft. They don't have helicopters. They don't have warplanes. They don't have missiles. They don't have tanks. All the kind of things, artillery, all the kind of things that the Nigerian military possessed. Nigerian military, the most populous country in Africa. They've got all of those kinds of tools. They spend billions of dollars a year on their military. Boko Haram has some trucks. They have some AK-47s. They have supplies of petrol that they turn into Molotov cocktails. And so this notion that the Nigerian government has allowed their military equipment and training to deteriorate while Boko Haram has amassed this great capacity to wage war and are more determined, as if determination and training were synonymous. It's just utterly idiotic. Boko Haram's not trained. There's nobody running Boko Haram training camps to teach people how to throw a Molotov cocktail or how to fire a AK-47. How to burn down a building? How to kidnap little girls? There's no training involved. And, you know, you could have the most advanced military in the world, but bullets and bombs are incapable of defeating a religious foe. It has always been the case. Look what happened when America invaded Afghanistan and Iraq. By dropping bombs and shooting bullets, we made two bad situations infinitely worse. Look what happened in Syria when America started supplying bullets and bombs to the Mujahideen. We made a very bad situation much worse. Look what happened in Egypt when America supplied the bullets and bombs. The Nigerian government could have a military the size of the United States, and it would be ever more counterproductive. That's why the American military is counterproductive. You can't win a debate between ideas. no matter how evil the idea may be on the opposing side, with bullets or bombs, it is impossible. That's why the U.S. military was incapable of stopping 9/11. Even if the CIA and FBI had informed the U.S. military that Ramzi Youssef, the first bomber of the World Trade Center, had conceived a plot to train Muslims to be suicide bombers and fly planes, commercial aircraft into America's buildings, and that the targets were the World Trade Center, the U.S. Capitol, the Pentagon, the U.S. military could not have stopped it. And this inference, not inference, just blunt statement that Nigerians are being terrorized not because Islam is evil, but because they have not properly invested in their military, shows you, A, that English majors in America's leading universities are indoctrinated, they are not educated. And it tells you where the world is headed, because it's the same indoctrinated fools that will occupy positions of leadership in America's military and America's government. This is our future. It is what's going to happen. And we can speak out against it, we can expose it, we can condemn it, but we can't change it. It is what is going to occur, and we need to be aware of it and to deal with it. It is extraordinarily sad, but this article goes on to say that the Nigerian military is a shadow of what it's reported to have once been, saying it's James Hall, a retired colonel and former British military attaché to Nigeria. They've fallen apart. First of all, there is no indication that that statement is legitimate, that the Nigerian military are all of a sudden comprised of people who are no longer trained and using equipment that is all old and ready to be discarded. And even if it were true, it would be irrelevant to the problem. The military is not the solution for Boko Haram. Words wielded wisely is. It says, unlike Nigerian peacekeepers in the 1990s who were effective at curbing ethnic bloodshed in Sierra Leone and Liberia, those in Mali last year lacked the equipment and training needed to be of much use against Al-Qaeda-linked forces involved in that mission. Well, the fact is that the world has changed. The religion of Islam hasn't changed, but over the past decade or so, actually probably since the late 1970s, following the United States renting the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and supplying them with weapons and money so that they could fight a proxy war against the Russians, we unleashed religious hell. And there's been no turning back from that point. That, combined with the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Americans embracing the PLO, it's called Fatah now in the Palestinian Authority, that combined with then Obama in Cairo announcing that this was a new age, a new day, it was the dawn of the era of Islam, that they should rise up, that we've created a monster. We've not only unleashed this monster from its cage, but we've supplied the monster with all manner of weapons. And the reason that the Nigerian peacekeepers were ineffective in Mali is the reason that America's weapons are ineffective in Syria, and America's tanks and Apache helicopters are ineffective in Egypt, and why America's invasion was counterproductive of Iraq and in Afghanistan. If you were to draw this equation, you would say, oh, well, you know, America was really successful in opposing the Japanese in World War II. But what happened to the Americans when they couldn't deal with little old Afghanistan and Iraq? Oh, so many years later. Was it because that American soldiers were no longer trained and their equipment was no longer good? No, it had nothing to do with that. We were fighting an entirely different foe, as were the Nigerians. It's not ethnic fighting that's taking place in Chad and Mali and Libya or in Syria. It wasn't ethnic fighting that was taking place in Iraq or Afghanistan. It's now religious fighting. And the foe is always the same, Islam. Are we going to deal with the foe? Are we going to pretend that everything else is responsible other than Islam? We'll be back in a moment. Turkish Prime Minister, really dictator, Erdogan, was heckled, or now he was the heckler. That's the nature of Muslims. They're always really thin-skinned. The country's Bar Association is the outfit that he heckled. He is being accused of being rude for his approach, but the fact is that in Turkey there is overwhelming evidence that Erdogan and his family have benefited immeasurably from graft, that they take bribes. There is overwhelming evidence that most of the generals who were persecuted under Erdogan so that he could gain control of the military that had long controlled Turkey were falsely convicted and falsely executed. There has been overwhelming evidence in Egypt that Erdogan's purge of the media, where he imprisoned journalists who said anything critical of him, has been shown that he broke every constitutional rule and manipulated the trials. Erdogan is being exposed for exactly what he is, a good Muslim, which makes him an awful person. And now he is heckling those who know the truth about him. It's just as it was the case when the audio recorded phone conversations made the internet, where Erdogan is talking to his son about how to launder the money that they stole for awarding pipeline rights across Turkey. Rather than take responsibility, he mocked his rivals. For having, in his view, illegally wiretapped him. And then when he was exposed by those who were protesting his dictatorial hand in Istanbul and the eradication of freedom squares, where some Turks still had the ability to go into a square and express themselves, and he decided that he was going to bulldoze it all down and turn it into a religious center. He then blamed those who peacefully protested against that move of being criminal terrorists and turned his army against them. This is the man that most in the West said was the exemplar that those engaged in the Arab Spring should follow. A man who was an elected leader in the Islamic world. Now, one of our problems is that we think that democracy is a virtue. But all democracy is a tyranny of the majority over the minority. Who are the majority in Turkey? Fundamentalist Muslims. Now, is there a minority in Turkey of non-fundamentalist Muslims? Absolutely, about 20% of the country. It's about the same number as in Egypt. About 20% of the country are non-fundamentalist Muslims. But when you have democracy, when you allow the people to vote, you get a tyranny of the majority. And in this case, the majority is prone to tyranny over the rights of the minority. And that's why when Egypt held free and open elections for the first time, nearly 70% of Egyptians voted for the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate, the Muslim Brotherhood. That's why in Egypt, no matter how many times Erdogan is shown to be corrupt, to be opposed to the interests of his people, the majority vote him into office. He is overwhelmingly popular in Turkey, even though he is absolutely scum. That's the issue with democracy. Always has been. That's why the founding fathers of the United States were so opposed to it. Now, I'm not telling you that Republican government or fascist government or communist government is better. Huge issues with all of man's attempts to govern. But democracy is not the answer. In fact, democracy is absolutely part of the problem. And never more so is it evident than in Turkey, with Erdogan mocking and heckling all who would do the right thing and use their words to expose him as a complete hypocritical fraud. And yet it doesn't matter. With the majority, they're religious. Evidence and reason doesn't resonate. He's their man. He is the most fundamentalist Muslim among Turks. The product of democracy.